The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, hello there. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now I would like to return to the May 2022 issue of Our State magazine. The theme this month is the burger issue, and that's all we're going to read about today. Lots and lots of articles are here. I don't know how many I'm going to get to, but there's lots of little things about, I guess, places to go get burgers. But so there's quite a bit of burgerism coming your way in the burger issue. Having it our way. In the Tar Heels state, a hamburger all the way means a big beef patty smothered with chili, onion, slaw, and mustard. Which isn't to say that North Carolina doesn't also serve its share of classics topped with lettuce and tomato. In fact, we have it all. From the mountains to the sea, our hamburger joints are part of a rich tradition sizzling with nostalgia. We've got a real close-up of a beauty here on the front cover. The caption says, when I say front cover, the front double spread of the article here, Boone Doggies in Mocksville serves its Mountaineer Burger, that's the one I'm looking at and salivating over, loaded with everything that makes Carolina burgers so delicious. The Yosef on the left comes with bacon, mushrooms, and Swiss cheese, and the grandfather shown on the right includes all the classic fillings. I see lettuce and tomato over there on the right, and I can't tell whether this is coleslaw or cut-up onion on the one in the center. Overleaf, we begin with the legend of Greensburger. The Gate City just may be the hamburger capital of North Carolina. Not only is its downtown area home to the storied Hamburger Square, but Greensboro is also the site of the state's first McDonald's. And that's not even counting the tasty burgers available at historic and contemporary spots all across town. Caption on a black and white photo, or sepia tone is more like it, actually. Back in the day, Greensboro residents never knew what mischief they might encounter at the infamous Jim's Lunch. Not so at the Boar and Castle on Market Street, where customers knew they could always order a delicious Castle Burger with its famous tomato mustard vinegar sauce, but that's now so popular statewide. This is an aerial view of Greensboro, back in the day, I guess. And there's a Boar and Castle, what did you call those little slips, an order slip or whatever that the waitresses carried, or you fill out your own. It says, Greensboro's most popular sandwich shop. Phone in for carry-out orders. And, of course, there's only 7 digits in the phone number. There's no such thing as an area code necessary in those days. You would start with a bottle of Boar and Castle sauce, 45 cents, or 3 for $1.45. I'm not sure what kind of a bargain that was. And then you have sandwiches and then additions to the above and all of the options that are down here. So if you wanted a Castle King with lettuce, tomato, dressing, sauce, and a pickle, it was 75 cents. Hardly what you would pay today. And French fries were only 40 cents. Overleaf, rough and rowdy ways. The tiny city block in downtown Greensboro, known as Hamburger Square, once had a gigantic reputation, not so much for its charbroiled beef patties, though they too were plentiful, but for its colorful characters and their wild shenanigans, written by Margaret Moffat. And there's a black and white photo here labeled Hamburger Square. And I don't see a street sign, so I can't tell you exactly where this is. I can tell you, and this may ring a bell with a few people, but this is way back then, because the cars on the street are really old. Well, let's see. Maybe it tells me on this side thing over here. It says, walking north on Greensboro's Elm Street from Hamburger Square in 1941, those daring enough to shop downtown for shoes or sporting goods would pass by Jim's Lunch on the left and the California Sandwich Shop on the right. So here's the corner, and it has a store, and they've superimposed a sign that says Jim's Lunch. They had big old awnings coming out of there, and the sign says hamburgers, 5 cents. And next to it was, looks like Coble Sporting Goods, and then a shoe store, and then Tuttle's. And I only mention this for the sake of those of you who may remember this. This street also had a trolley line with overhead electrical wires stretching from the buildings. On the right-hand side, it says Hotel Harris, California Sandwich Shop. And it says 5 cents for something. Can't read what it is. And it was called the California. There's a superimposed sign there. It says California Sandwich Shop. And then there's a Budweiser sign that sticks out. And there's a very big building in the background, sort of a, for that day, a very modern and very tall office or apartment building or something. Way down there, I see a sign that says National. I don't know if that was a theater or whatever. And another one that says State, and I do see a marquee there. So that was probably a movie theater. Greensboro, late 1970s, an enterprising young journalist sets out to chronicle the salacious, nefarious, and potentially felonious goings-on in the district of downtown known as Hamburger Square. The obvious place to start? Jim's Lunch, Greasy Spoon, Saloon, Crossroads of the Unsavory. So off he goes, this baby-faced reporter for the Greensboro Record, pen and pad tucked into the pocket of his blue blazer. His name is Jim Schlosser. And no sooner does he open the door to this Greasy Spoon than two men come charging out, nearly knocking him down. One is clearly chasing the other, and according to Schlosser, is holding the longest knife I've ever seen in my life. Schlosser, now 79 years old, happily retired and living only 6 blocks from Hamburger Square, recounts the incident as though he were describing a movie scene. Then I sat down on a stool and talked to the guy who owned the place, he says. He was as calm as he could be. And that, friends, is the essence of Hamburger Square. Until the 1980s, the area was home to the kinds of bars, grills, and no-tell hotels that don't get featured in the Chamber of Commerce brochures. Today, it's a hipster's paradise. It's formerly notorious corners populated by 2 breweries and an upscale funky gift shop. 3 of the eateries currently operating within the district's unofficial boundaries, Natty Green's Downtown, Gray's Tavern, and McCool Public House, do, in fact, sell hamburgers. But they're honorable, upstanding burgers, the kind that arrive at your table on actual plates instead of grease-stained cardboard or wax paper, the kind that cost $8, $10, or even $12. These are not the hamburgers of the Hamburger Square of lore. Not even close. One thing must be noted. Hamburger Square has about as much to do with hamburgers as New York City's Wall Street does with walls. Their name merely remnants a colorful history that most residents under 40 never learned. Oh, sure, you could get a hamburger in Hamburger Square back in the day. A good one, too. The name comes from the noontime offerings at joints like Jim's Lunch, the California Sandwich Shop, and other diners and dive bars over the years. But for 8 or 9 decades, the mention of Hamburger Square to a local conjured images of something other than ground beef, mustard, and a buttered bun. These weren't respectable establishments, says Schlosser, who exited Jim's Lunch to spend 3 more decades documenting Greensboro's past and present for the newspaper. These were joints. It's hard to describe a place like a Hamburger Square in the language of 2022, says Randy Barnes, a Greensboro native who in 2013 photographed and reviewed 1 local hamburger every week for 1 year at hamburgersquare.com, his now-defunct blog. Well, point well taken. Many of the things that gave the square its character are now rightly considered part of our social ills, not matters that deserve scorn and ridicule. In its prime, such as it was, Hamburger Square's reputation by far surpassed its real estate. It sits on the south end of downtown where South Elm and West McGee streets meet, bordered by railroad tracks to the south and the more upstanding, at least in years past, Jefferson Square, three blocks north. One small city block with its essence extended to a few buildings in each direction. Until the 1920s, the city's train depot was there, resulting in the near-consistent flow of travelers who might need an inexpensive meal, a cheap hotel room, and potentially the company of a woman. A woman for hire. Those could be found at the hotels above Jim's Lunch and the California Sandwich Shop. The combination of prostitutes, itinerants, and ne'er-do-wells milling about made the square feel more like an Amsterdamesque red light district than the family-friendly dining and entertainment hub that it is today. Barnes, who came of age in the 1960s and 70s, remembers the square more charitably. It was a place where the poorest people could get a bite for cheap, but also a hard place in the road, says Barnes, whose family history in Greensboro dates to the Civil War. Hamburger Square was a derogatory thing, he says. It wasn't a, hey, let's go get a hamburger kind of place. Schlosser, himself a fourth-generation resident, values Greensboro's uniqueness perhaps more than anyone alive. His grandfather managed a general store in South Elm Street just off the square, and in the late 1940s and early 50s, little Jimmy would visit often, absorbing all the sights, sounds, and smells for future reporting. The restaurant windows, he says, were perpetually steamed up from the heat rising off of hot dogs and hamburgers, and the smell of cigars wafted over the square at all hours, most likely from the El Moro Cigar Company factory behind Jim's Lunch. The adult Schlosser took every opportunity to document Hamburger Square as a journalist and the city's unofficial historian, most memorably in an essay for 27 Views of Greensboro, a 2015 collection of prose and poetry celebrating the Gate City. He did so most waggishly in the full-page spread that the Record published shortly after his visit to Jim's Lunch in the 1970s. Once elegant section, now Wino's World, the article announced at the top of the page, daring right-minded readers to venture into the bad part of town. These men suffering from chronic and untreated alcoholism, as the newspaper might refer to them now, had a pecking order of sorts. As Schlosser remembers 40-some years later, one of the men even considered himself the mayor. Around the time when little Jimmy Schlosser was wandering Hamburger Square, a young Milton Kern was growing up 50 miles away in Montgomery County. His contractor father, who frequently traveled from Star to Greensboro for business, often mentioned eating lunch in the square. Roughly three decades later, in 1981, the younger Kern brought his first local property just a few blocks away on South Elm Street. Since then, he added several more downtown buildings to his holdings. Kern has become the downtown district's moral conscience, challenging attempts to replace the distinctive with the homogeneous. Not that he's advocating the return of public intoxication and knife-wielding street fighters to Hamburger Square. He does, however, wish that the powers that be had more of a heart for the qualities that once made the area so special, a sense of time and place that tell a story about Greensboro and Greensboro alone. There are only five blocks of old Greensboro on South Elm Street left standing, and my belief is that these properties must be preserved, Kern says. They contain much of our history. Barnes has sought to blend Hamburger Square's past with its present in a way that's socially palatable. In 2019, as city leaders and civic groups planned a $370,000 renovation of the square's park, he proposed handing out free wooden nickels, good for a hamburger at Natty Green's, McCool's, or Gray's. In the meantime, Barnes, Schlosser, Kern, and others await the return of a bona fide hamburger joint to Hamburger Square, the kind of place that wears its steam windows up like, or steamed up windows like a badge of honor. Sidebar, a fast food icon. In September 1959, the Golden Arches arrived in North Carolina. The 140th McDonald's on Summit Avenue in Greensboro was the first in the state and the first fast food restaurant in the city. The revolutionary streamlined method of food preparation, modeled on Henry Ford's automobile assembly line process, allowed diners to get their meals faster and cheaper than anywhere else in town. The menu's only combo meal included a hamburger, fries, and a shake, all just for 45 cents. Nearly 63 years later, the restaurant is still open in its original location, albeit in a new building. James Smitty Smith, who has co-owned the restaurant with his wife, Deborah, since 2000, is proud to own North Carolina's first McDonald's. He's prouder still to be one of the first African-Americans to own a McDonald's restaurant in the Triad, an honor he achieved when he purchased two other Greensboro locations in 1993. From 1959 to 1963, African-Americans couldn't even go in the front door to be served. They had to go to the back door, Smitty says, of the Summit Avenue location. Some of my church members mentioned that to me when we purchased it. How proud they were of my family. We consider this part of our legacy. And now, the Gate City's storybook burgers. These grills and griddles have made Greensboro a burger town. Once upon a time, there was a castle on West Market Street in Greensboro, the Boren Castle. From 1932 until 1980, customers would drive up and wait in their cars for a castle burger or a butter steak sandwich topped with the Boren Castle's namesake sauce, which owner Leon Thomas's mother created more than a century ago. In the 1960s, a Castle Burger would run you about 40 cents, as would a bottle of the coveted sauce, which can still be found today on local grocery store shelves. Teenagers and freshly minted driver's licenses would haul their friends to the Boren Castle for burgers and onion rings with extra sauce on the side, served warm in small cups. For those who grew up in Greensboro during this era, this was the spot for a great burger in the days when fast food was served in a tray attached to the side of your car door. In 1961, a new kind of burger joint came to the town. The popular Florida-based chain Biff Burger, which advertised a patented roto-broiled burger, set up shop on what was then known as Wesley Street. The chain went under in the 70s, but the Greensboro location kept on, changing its name to Beef Burger in 1981. Owner Ralph Havis, who ran Beef Burger until he fell ill and died in the summer of 2021, was as much of a staple at the beloved restaurant as the burgers he served. The restaurant, which closed after Havis's death, earned a loyal following that kept coming back for a simple reason. It served an affordable, honest burger that kept Greensboro fed for nearly 60 years. Although the Boren Castle and Beef Burger are now only fond memories for local hamburger fans, the legacy of these original burger joints lives on across the city that has earned the very unofficial moniker, Greens Burger. Picture at the top here says the gabled roof of the Boren Castle was a landmark on West Market Street for half a century, as unmistakable as the restaurant's popular sauces, the taste of which was still takes patrons back to the days of eating burgers at the beloved drive-in. Overleaf Hops Burger Bar, the Gourmet Burger. You'd be forgiven if you mistook the flavor-packed toppings at Hops Burger Bar for the menu at a fine dining restaurant. Farm-fresh fried eggs, bourbon-marinated pickles, jalapeno bacon, roasted garlic-thyme aioli, wasabi slaw. But it's those fancy fixins that are helped earn Hops the title of best burger in the country from TripAdvisor in 2015. Just 2 years after the now legendary burger spot opened on Spring Garden Street, right around the corner from UNC Greensboro and the bungalows of the Lindley Park neighborhood. From the beginning, co-owners Chris Martin and David Essa paired experimental burgers with craft beers at a time when such a concept was relatively new for the area. Since then, the Hops family has grown to include two locations in Greensboro and one in Winston-Salem. Crowd favorites on the menu include the North Carolinian, piled high with a fried egg, applewood, bacon, pimento, cheese, lettuce, and perfectly fried green tomato. It's tied in popularity with the Diablo, which has pepper jack cheese, guacamole, jalapenos, lettuce, sautéed onions, and jalapeno bacon, all piled under a sriracha bun. Of course, the ultimate test of a burger spot is its classic version, and the Hops Classic, American cheese, bacon, and all the fixings have been the most ordered option since day one. So go ahead, indulge in a fancier burger with all the drippy yolks, house-made sauces, and grilled pineapple you want. But just know that a classic burger, like the one that has kept Hop's predecessors, Beef Burger and the Boren Castle in business for a combined 108 years, still wins Greensboro's hearts and appetites. They're on Spring Garden Street. They have a website, hopsburgerbar.com. Now we have some shorts here, brief descriptions of various places. Emma Keys, flat top famous. A customer takes his place in the line that snakes up to the walk-up window at Emma Keys in the historic Lindley Park neighborhood. He never glances at the menu. There's no need. He's eaten here so often that there's a dedicated button on the cash register just for his order. A burger as rare as they make it, on sourdough bread with pickles. From certain spots in line, hungry customers can see just beyond the cashier to the restaurant's legendary flat-top grill. Workers stand at the range, prepping epic burgers like the Lone Star, a 6-ounce patty featuring cheddar, bacon, mayo, lettuce, tomato, crispy onions, and barbecue sauce. Before becoming a burger joint, the space had been a barbershop that opened in the 1950s, which incidentally was where current Emma Keys owner Gene Bordinger used to get his hair cut. Now it's renowned for its fries, like the Carolina cheese fries, smothered with pimento cheese and topped with bacon and dill spears, and its burgers served in a classic red plastic basket. It's the only throne for a proper patty. Walker Avenue. Website, emmakeys.com. Fisher's Grill, the neighborhood spot. The bar at Fisher's Grill is packed this afternoon, and like it's almost every afternoon. Around lunchtime, it becomes sort of a census report of Greensboro come to life. There are families from around the corner. There are coworkers, some in heels and some in dusty boots. And then there's tables of guys sitting under the chalkboard menu. They've been there so long that it's as if the bar was built around them. For 33 years, Fisher's Grill has stood at the edge of its historic namesake, the Fisher Park neighborhood. A few years after Doug Jones opened the bar in 1989, he hired Mike Stover as the kitchen manager. In the years since, Stover has served up countless burgers that are consistently delicious. If you came in 15 years ago, if you come in today, that burger is going to be the same, Stover says. One of the most popular options is the Cajun burger, a spicy stack of red and green peppers, provolone cheese, onions, and a juicy burger and a buttered brioche bun. They're easy to spot on the bar during the lunch rush and fit in well with the colorful decor, a mix of Detroit Jones as a Motor City native and North Carolina sports memorabilia and that chalkboard menu, which has itself become a Greensboro icon. And then we have the Big Burger Spot, a burger for everyone. 11 years ago, Guy Bradley opened the first Big Burger Spot on Battleground Avenue with a couple of stipulations. All of the food would be made from scratch, and every customer should be able to find something on the menu to enjoy. With 13 burger options, 15 different kinds of fries, 32 toppings from homemade chili to pimento cheese, Bradley has stuck to his word. Bradley chose an unexpected location for his restaurant, a building that it shares with a gas station, and an unconventional method of cooking burgers, an infrared grill, whose extremely high temperatures give burgers a deep, charred flavor without drying them out. Customers were hooked so much that Bradley opened two other Big Burger spots in the Triad. In return for their loyalty, many regulars have had their portraits sketched on the mural at the flagship location. Pointing to each face, Bradley rattles off names and go-to orders, including comedian Steve Harvey, who ate at Big Burger Spot in 2015 after featuring it on his show. Harvey's order, a mountainous creation with a pair of patties topped with cheese and steak fries. They're on Battleground Avenue, BigBurgerSpot.com. How about Boone Doggies in Moxville? You'd think they would be in Boone, wouldn't you? One bite of Boone Doggies. Classic burger, the grandfather, transports you to a balmy October tailgate at Appalachian State University. It's the quintessential cookout burger with lettuce, mayo, diced onions, locally sourced tomatoes, American cheese, a butter-toasted bun, and two smash-ball patties, each one pressed firmly to the grill to sear in the juices and create a crispy outer layer. Owner Drew Ousley graduated from ASU in 2013 with a degree in nutrition and foods. He started the original Boondoggies as a hot dog cart a year later. He opened a restaurant in Yadkinville in 2019 and then a second location in Moxville in 2021, both of which he operates alongside his father. Andrew and his fiancée, Meredith Millen, Ousley's sister Claudia, who also graduated from ASU, designed Boondoggie's logo, an illustration of their childhood dog, Ty, holding a hot dog in his mouth. Inspired by his time at App, Ousley gave all of Boondoggie's menus, items, names related to the university in the Boone area, like the Yosef, named for ASU's beloved mascot, the Mountaineer, a nod to the school's sports teams, and the Peacock, named for former Chancellor Ken Peacock. We love when alumni come in and get excited when they see all the Appalachian decor on the wall and see the menu names, Ousley says. It's like taking a trip down memory lane. U.S. Highway 64, and they are on Facebook as Boondoggies. I don't know if we have time to do this one, but we'll try it. The Small Batch Beer Company in Winston-Salem. Tim Walker describes the Winston Burger at Small Batch Beer Company in two words: messy and delicious. The burger is a creative combination of southern flavors including hand-pattied beef, house-made pimento cheese, caramelized onions, and potato chips for a satisfying crunch, topped with a single black olive and a pepperoncini spear. Served, like all of Small Batch's burgers, in a handheld skillet. Small Batch is the realization of Walker's longtime dream to own a brewery. In 2014, he opened a nano brewery in downtown Winston-Salem and named it for all the Small Batches of beer that he was making at the time. 3 years later, he added a restaurant and eventually a full bar. When he was designing Small Batch's menu, Walker knew that he wanted a burger as vibrant as the city of arts and innovation. After careful considerations and a bit of trial and error, he and the chefs came up with a winning combination. These days, Small Batch is the place to be if you enjoy a boisterous soccer game. The restaurant is the official bar for the local Liverpool fan club, the Camel City Gooners, and the American Outlaws. Fans continue to enjoy beers, including the popular Lemon Man IPA, made in the brewery next to the restaurant, accompanied, of course, by the Winston. And that, my friends, is all the time we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I certainly hope you enjoyed it, and you'll be sure to listen next time. I am Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments, questions, please call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.